Welcome to the Girls Only Project podcast, where we will be discussing all things women in sport. We want to use this platform to discuss and share the challenges we face as women in sport. It's awesome to have Bree Walker on the Girls Only Project podcast with me today. Bree started out her career as a 400 meter hurdler, where she competed for 10 years at a national level. She then switched to bobsleigh in 2016 and made her World Cup debut in 2018. Bree competed at the 2022 Winter Olympics in Beijing, finishing in an impressive fifth place. Bree, it's awesome to have you on the podcast. And yeah, I can't wait to hear about this interesting career change that you made.
Nah, thanks for having me. I'm excited to chat to you today.
Awesome. Okay. I mean, yeah, let's start kind of at the beginning. Obviously, started off in athletics. Tell us a little bit about that, and then we'll get into the transition.
Yeah, I was a 400 meter runner, 400 meter hurdler, and been doing that mainly as a senior athlete. And I actually competed, got offered a full scholarship to a university in America, the University of Arkansas in Little Rock. Which was a wonderful experience, and I really had a fantastic time over there. But the college system is quite different to, I guess, how we would train in Australia. And I guess I'm not the first Australian athlete to say that. And it's heavily weight-based. So I was thrown in the gym there, and being the body type that I am, I just instantly put on a lot of muscle. And I did warn my coach that I was probably going to do that, but he was like, no, we'll manage your training accordingly. But yeah, a year later, I opened up the season with my slowest 400 that I had since I was like 16. And I was just like, no, this isn't the place for me. So I decided to go back to Australia and continue my 400 meter hurdle journey back there. But I kind of suffering a few injuries, and just had to, around the time that the Rio Olympics was on, I had to ask myself the big question whether I was going to be able to represent Australia at like an international level and at the Olympic Games in 400 meter hurdles. And the hard answer was no. And so I simply just Googled whether we had an Australian bobsleigh team. And bobsleigh was always something that I thought I would do at the end of my athletic career, but I was still young and I had so much more to give. And so, yeah, I just Googled whether we had a team, and we didn't, but at the time they were revamping it for the Pyeongchang 2018 Winter Olympics. Okay. So I just signed up for the talent identification camp, and yeah, the rest is history. I went along to the camp, achieved all the standards, and was a month later was sent off to Whistler in Canada to learn how to drive a bobsleigh.
Yeah, amazing. Very, very cool story. But yeah, let's just go back a little bit. So yeah, you were kind of saying like around the age of 16, you were competing, you know, in athletics. Has sport always been like a part of your life? Family always done it? Yeah. Is it like natural progression for you?
Yeah, definitely. All the way through my life, I was involved in sport, in a few different sports. I used to be a horse rider, and then I did track and field, and then switching lastly over to bobsleigh. But even throughout my school, I was always heavily involved in all inter-school sports and playing AFL, touch football, volleyball, all the sports that I could really get my hand on at school. It was that was my strength, was sport at school. And so, yeah, it's always been I've always been heavily involved in sport.
Yeah, and competitiveness as well, always a part of you, like always wanting to achieve, be the best. Does that also kind of run in your blood?
Yeah, definitely. I think I have a very addictive personality, and I'm very addicted to being the best. And anything that I decide that I want to be competitive in, it's not just that I want to compete, I want to be the best.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, definitely when I decided that I want to do bobsleigh, it's like, I don't want to do this just to, like, you know, go to the Olympics and participate. Like, I want to be a competitor. And that's what the last 4 years has been geared towards, is being a true competitor at the last Olympics.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, interesting what you said about going to the States for kind of university and also, you know, trying to improve your athletics at the time. I think often a lot of athletes go that in that direction thinking it's better than, you know, what we have in our own country. You know, and I think for some people it is a great opportunity because it probably is better for them. But it's just interesting, like, you maybe did you feel like things actually, or the system, athletics kind of system in Australia, was a better option than what they were offering in the States?
Well, I just think that athletics in Australia, this is like our hobby and it's like our sport. It's a sport that we do outside of school and work. But over in the States, a lot of students actually use their sport in a way to get a free education because they're on a scholarship. And so often they don't, that's not their main focus. Sport is not their main focus. Their education is their main focus and they do the sport so they can get a free education. It's not always the case. I definitely know that, but that's just how I felt it was treated at my university sometimes by some of the athletes. And for me, I went over there to do sport. Like, we have a fantastic education system here in university system. I didn't go over there to do that. I went over there to get better at my sport. And I was my season opener after being there for a year, and I had my slowest season opener. I was like, nah, this is not the reason why I'm here. And so that's why I chose to come home.
Yeah, for sure. So very kind of mature decision, obviously thinking about your own career and what you want to achieve. And then I mean, the bobsleigh, you know, it was quite a quick sort of transition into it, and then competing at a World Cup level, you know, 2 years later. You know, how did that process like take part? I mean, you said like when you Googled it, they were just kind of rebuilding bobsleigh, and then 2 years later you at a World Cup. Like, that's a very quick sort of development.
Yes, it really is. And I talked to a lot of the institutes about my development over the last few days, because they've all come to me in the last little while and be like, how can we help for this next Olympic cycle? And so I explained to them like my development over the last few years and how it was a very fast, I guess, developing curve that I had to do in order to be where I am today. And I guess I needed to, I did what I needed to do in order to be able to compete for Australia, because ultimately our sport is self-funded, and to get some sort of funding from these institutes, I had to show results on the board. So therefore I then had to race. So it was just doing what was necessary in order to be able to compete. And I had to learn fast and compete at the highest level. And there's been some disadvantages to that. But there's also been some huge advantages to that. Like, I feel very comfortable competing on World Cup and competing against the big names in the sport, and they don't intimidate me, and I feel like I belong there. And I think if I was to have a bit of a slower development and maybe took my time, maybe I would feel far more intimidated to be standing next to them in the locker room and at the line. And so, I think there is advantages and disadvantages to my quick development in the sport.
For sure. But I think overall, you just knew what you wanted to achieve. You put your head down and did what it took. I mean, I think that's a bottom line that we're getting out of this, is that, you just could see the goal kind of nothing was going to get in your way. So that's obviously, like a really good mindset to have. And then, I mean, competing in the Olympics, you competed in two different events, right?
Yes. Yeah, so, I competed in the monobob, which is the one-person bobsleigh event, which is a new event at the Beijing Olympics, and then also the two-man event that's been traditionally what the females competed in at the Olympics.
Okay, and with that monobob being like the first time at the Olympics, obviously no one really knew what to expect, or you'd competed in it at World Cups. How did that go?
Well, it was a whole new experience for me, because this was my first Olympics. And so I didn't really know what to expect I had a fair idea, and I've got a lot of great people in my corner who have prepped me for this event. But yeah, we didn't know how this event was going to go because we also hadn't had a lot of experience on the Olympic track. Mm. So generally, like, you know, if you head to a certain track that we compete on a lot in Europe or North America, you tend to know who the favorites are competing on the track. But at the Olympics, we had no idea. So it was a really exciting event because I had produced some pretty good results in training, but so had some other athletes. So it was really like, oh, who is going to be able to lay down their best performance when it counts? Because nobody really knew who was going to be able to do that. And so it was a really exciting race to be a part of.
Awesome. Yeah, that's really cool. Almost the unknown is sometimes the best way to go into things. no expectation.
Yeah,
that's really cool. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, tell us a little bit about the other event, the two-man event.
Yeah, so we two-man event, I think we had a little bit more of an idea who was going to be the dominating forces. But still, again, we didn't have a lot of experience on that track, so you didn't really know what to expect. And myself and my teammate Kiara, we haven't actually raced a lot. We raced three times with each other throughout the season. She was new to the sport this year, and just the way the season ran, she actually ended up on my team at the end of the year. And so we really, again, went in with no expectations, and we just wanted to lay down our best performances. And it was just the result in the end. And we were happy to walk away from our first Olympics and our fourth race together.
Yes.
and we're hoping to build on that for the future as well.
Yeah, I was just going to say, is that something you'll move forward doing, competing in both events, continue to compete in both? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. That's how bobsleigh works, and I think being a part of both events is just how bobsleigh is. And I also, like, as much as I love doing the monobob and competing by myself, I love being a part of a team, and that's what two man provides me. So I will definitely still continue in both events.
Yeah, such a nice dynamic to have. You know, you can focus a bit on yourself, but then also I have that team aspect, which is always nice. You don't feel too lonely, which is great.
Yeah. And you get to the bottom of the track and you've done a really good run, and you get to celebrate with your teammate because you've both been able to execute a good performance together. I love both events. They both have their advantages, that's for sure.
And obviously, with her, Kiara, also being new to bobsleigh, like you said, it was her first year. You know, you went into it also fairly new. Was it easy to find people to do it with? Like, was there a lot of people who were interested in it? Like, how is the bobsleigh kind of community, I guess, looking?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Like, in the beginning, it was really difficult to find people, and how I kind of recruited my team was a lot of just asking people if they knew of somebody who may be suited to bobsleigh, or even just looking through Instagram and just seeing if a girl is suited to bobsleigh, I might send her a message, or looking through state athletic championships and saying, oh, this girl ran very fast, this girl threw pretty far, so maybe I would find her on Instagram and contact her or email her. And you, of course, you get a lot of people not replying to you, but then you do get the diamonds in the rough that do reply to you, and or like the people who you've contacted, they pass you on a name and you get in touch with them. And that's how I found my other teammate, Sarah Blizzard. That was through a coach who was in Canberra, and he got the message and then just asked Sarah at training one day, hey Sarah, would you consider doing bobsleigh? And Sarah's like, oh yeah, I'd give it a go. And then all of a sudden I was on the phone to her explaining everything, and then and again the rest is history with her. We were part of a team for 3 years together, and just kind of all like fell into place with her. But yeah, I really hope that like hopefully people have seen me at the Winter Olympics and seen what we've been able to achieve, and hopefully more people would be interested in contacting our federation to jump on board, and hopefully the sport grows in Australia, because it's such a fun sport, and it provides athletes with such great opportunities, and especially those fringe athletes who are like not quite able, like have the physical capabilities to compete in like track and field or other sports at an international level, but if they just transfer their talents over to something like bobsleigh, then boom, they're able to break into the international field and go and achieve all their dreams that way. And so yeah, I hope it does bring other people into the sport.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's all about just getting it out there and creating awareness around it, which I mean, it sounds like you're doing quite well in stalking a few people along the way. But I mean, you know, you got to do what you got to do to get people on board, and that's fine. And you've probably given you know, some athletes some great opportunities by doing that. So it's amazing. And yeah, the kind of bobsleigh federation in Australia, kind of support wise, have they been really on board and supportive of kind of, you know, trying to develop the sport in Australia?
I think at the moment it's kind of just been the athletes who have been most interested. They've been the ones that have kind of led the charge in it. And the federation has changed hands over the years, and they've just kind of just been running with the athletes who have been on board. But I think after the success of these last Olympics, I hope that they're going to be able to capitalize on that and be able to if there have been people that have contacted the federation, they're going to be able to scoop them up and say, all right, let's like test you on home soil and see if you're physically suited for this sport. And then maybe we'll send you off overseas to go and, you know, learn how to push or learn how to drive a bobsled. So I'm not actually too sure what they're doing in that capacity, because I've come home from the Olympics and tried to have a minute to breathe, and then also trying to figure out how the next 4 years looks for me. But yeah, I hope they're doing their part to help grow the sport in Australia.
For sure. And kind of coach wise and where you train, like, do you spend a lot of that time in Australia or are you mainly abroad?
Yeah, I'm mainly abroad, actually. I'm now based over in Frankfurt in Germany. My boyfriend is a German bobsledder. Okay. And then also I train as a part of his squad, and so my coach is my push coach is a German. And so yeah, most of my time is spent over in Germany. And I'll be probably looking for a new driving coach for the next 4 years. And so I don't actually know who that is right now, but that's one of the things that I'm trying to figure out over the next few months.
Yeah. And financially, is the federation supportive? Are you kind of paid? What does that side of things look like?
Yeah, it's been really hard. Like, as I said previously, our sport is self-funded, and I do receive support from the Winter Olympic Institute of Australia, so OWIA, and I do also receive some support from the Queensland Academy of Sport, QAS. And but then other than that, the rest of my funding comes from sponsors that I do find. The federation doesn't have any big sponsors, and so they just provide small amounts of money that they receive from the government. And so yeah, everything that I've achieved so far has really come out of my own pocket or my own sourcing of sponsors, which is really difficult, because, you know, bobsleigh isn't on your mainstream TV here in Australia. It's mainly over in Europe. So that's also kind of why I base myself in Europe, because I try and find sponsors over there who are interested in becoming part of my journey. But I do hope with the exposure that we've gotten from the last Olympics that we will be able to get some sort of Australian sponsors on board Just simply because they want to be a part of the journey and they like what we're about. But yeah, everything that I've been able to achieve so far has just come from just sourcing out any source of income or funding that we can, which is hard. And I know it's a lot of the reason why people are turned off from sport, because they simply cannot afford it. But I hope that, like, by sharing my journey, that like athletes athletes just know that if you just keep going and if you're determined enough to, you know, compete in the sport that is quite expensive, if you just keep going and find a way to make it happen, then you will be able to do it. And if you don't find a way to make it happen, then it definitely won't happen, you know? So, that's just a big message I want to send out there to all athletes, just to keep going, even when the going gets tough and you seem like you have no way of being able to fund it or achieve it. You just got to keep going and try and find ways to make it happen.
Yeah, keep those goals alive. Keep working towards them. For sure, because it's definitely worth it when you get there. Always, I mean, I don't think you'll ever hear an Olympic athlete say to you, "This wasn't worth all the, you know, the stressful times, all the pain and suffering, and training and all of that." It was 100% worth it. So, it is difficult for people who struggle with funding and struggle to afford it. But, like they say, where there's a will, there's a way. So, you just got to keep pushing.
Definitely.
And then kind of just want to speak a little bit about, you know, the kind of women in sport and in bobsleigh and, you know, how like women are perceived, or, I mean, competing in World Cups. I'm not quite sure how it works. Do you guys get, if you do well, do you get prize money? Is prize money equal? How is a comparison between men and women in the sport?
Yeah, it's that's very interesting that you asked that, because we there was something that was put out this week saying that monobob is actually not being provided with any prize money for the World Series competition this year. So I guess, like, for those who don't know, each year we have six competitions, and at the end of the six competitions all your points are added up and then you are ranked from like one to downwards, and then you're provided with prize money. And the foreman is provided with prize money, the two men is provided with prize money, the two women is provided with prize money, but the monobob is actually yet to be provided with any prize money for as long as it's been as a World Series. And so 2 years, 2 seasons ago, I was ranked second overall and we weren't provided with any prize money. And then this year I was ranked fifth overall and it's just been announced that we probably will not be receiving any prize money. And I'm yet to investigate it, but I'm really upset about it, because that's a hell of a lot of money that I'm missing out on, which I don't necessarily put in my pocket. It provides me with much needed funds for the following season. And so that's something that's really upset me, and I really want to address it with the International Bobsleigh and Skeleton Federation, because it seems completely unfair. We work just as hard. We have to buy our own bobsleds, and we travel around the world and work just as hard as any other athlete competing in any of the other events. And I just don't understand why we haven't been provided with any funding. So it's really upsetting, and I hope it changes over the next Olympic cycle, but it's very much like I'm hurt by the fact that I don't receive that money from the last two seasons, because it really could go a long way to helping my small team improve our results. So yeah, that's really quite disappointing. But the sport is kind of dominated by men, you would say. There isn't many female coaches, and it is like less female athletes than men, but purely I think that's because the men have a four-man team and the women only have the two-man team. So it's not really necessary to have as many females in the sport as it is for the four men. But I try not to let those kind of things limit me, and I just go forth and do what needs to be done to be competitive. But I definitely am going to raise the question of why Monobob isn't receiving any funding, because that's not fair at all.
Yeah, that doesn't seem, yeah, it doesn't seem right. very confusing.
No.
But yeah, I mean, you definitely seem like someone who really doesn't let the small stuff get you down, or even the big stuff sometimes. Mm. And you kind of just, you know, tunnel vision, and you have this goal and you want to achieve it, which is, yeah, just an incredible mindset to have. And I mean, in terms of kind of, if we talk about, you know, the way women look, or like as sprinters, you know, like we're always going to be a little bit more like muscular, you know, look a different way. You know, have you ever kind of dealt with any prejudice in terms of how you look, or how strong you are? You know, has that kind of ever been something that you've had to deal with in your career?
I don't think I've ever had somebody come to me and say, like, you know, you're too muscly or you're too skinny or anything. I'm often made fun of my size in in bobsleigh land, because I'm actually quite small for a bobsledder. But then I come into, like, you know, the real world, like in the Australian public, and I'm average, if not big. And so, so that's the only time I've ever felt that, you know, my physical attributes have been criticized. Yeah. But I think it's more for me. I have often criticized myself, especially when I was doing track and field. I always was quite bigger and more muscular compared to the other tall, gangly kind of 400-meter hurdlers. And that made me feel like I didn't belong a lot of the time. I was always trying to fight to lose weight and look a certain way. And it really did lead me to living quite an unhealthy lifestyle. And but then as soon as I switched over to bobsleigh, because it's a gravity sport, you have to put on weight.
Yeah.
And so instantly, as I started putting on weight, like, I could see that my training improved, my energy improved. And I just was like, I must have been so malnourished as a 400 meter athlete. And if I had my time again, I would definitely approach it in a different manner. But you don't know until you know, right? And so I'm very blessed that I did switch over to bobsleigh when I did, because it just changed my life, like, both physically, mentally, emotionally, and I guess spiritually as well. I'm very open about that, and I like to share my journey on that, because I just hope that I can, you know, that, like, one young female athlete can hear it and it would maybe change her way of thinking, because I was very focused on how I looked rather than how I performed. And that was my mind shift when I went over to bobsleigh. I'm like, well, I need to put on weight, so I'm going to look different, but just as long as I'm performing good, then that's all that matters. And that's one mind set that I wish I had when I was doing 400 meters, because it doesn't matter ultimately how you look at the end of the day. All that matters is how you perform.
Yeah, totally. And it's something, yeah, I've spoken to quite a few guests about, is always that learning in terms of, people perceive that you need to look a certain way in order to do a certain sport, but actually doesn't really matter how you look. It's just how you perform. And we've got to nourish ourselves and fuel ourselves so that we can perform to our best ability. And often we get that wrong because of you know, what's happening or coming in from the outside. So yeah, it's definitely important that, you know, people coming up in their sports hear these kind of stories and know that, you know, if they're feeling that way, they're not alone. But at the end of the day, it's about how they feel when they're performing and how they feel when they're training. If they don't feel like they are optimizing themselves, then there might be something wrong there. So yeah, it's definitely being aware of that, and hoping that more and more, I think, coaches and support staff are there to provide the support during that time. Because I think sometimes that's also where the problem lies, is that athletes feel a little bit afraid to speak out about it. You know, coaches are not sure what's going on in their heads. And then, yeah, it's kind of a, it's not a great place to be. So it's just education around it as well. I think that's important, making sure you have the right support team around you. Obviously I feel like you didn't have that when you were, you know, in the athletics side of things, but now that you've switched over to bobsleigh, it feels like you are surrounded with people who are very supportive and have knowledge and are helping you.
Yeah. And I've actually become a part of the AIS Female Performance Health Initiative, which is all about providing like education and resources for athletes, coaches, support staff around these kind of topics. Because like you picked up, like I didn't necessarily have that as a track and field athlete. A lot of the time I was just kind of, I had a coach and they were very supportive of me, but I just didn't have that extra bit of education that I think I needed at the time. And so like if we put out all modules around a different areas around fueling your body, about mindset, about body image, and it's simply to just provide the extra resources to young athletes, young female athletes, coaches, how support staff of how like athletes feel, and then also what you can do to help your athlete improve their performance. And it's been such a great initiative. I'm so proud to be a part of it because it's definitely something that I'm very passionate about.
Yeah, no, I mean, that sounds like an incredible initiative and something that, you know, we all need as much as, and I say it often, as much as athletes need the support, so do the coaches often need that education and support as well. You know, not all coaches are coming from a background in nutrition or you know, psychology or something like that, and they often need that guidance as well. And that's super important that it's not just the athlete being provided with that, but also the coaching and support staff, so on both fronts.
And what you don't know, you don't know. And so if coaches and support staff and athletes are willing to go and educate themselves and just hear other athletes' stories and learn from their journeys, then it's just going to help improve their own performance. So I really encourage people to educate themselves in areas if they feel like they're not maximizing their performance because of they have a deficiency somewhere.
And it's totally nothing to be ashamed of at all. I mean, in all aspects of life, we always want to improve, learn more, have more knowledge, know more about things. So I think it applies for everyone, and we don't always have to know everything. We can learn. So it's just kind of sometimes putting the ego aside and taking, you know, knowledge from other people and expertise from others. So that's awesome. Yeah, and I love it. What's kind of next for you? Obviously working towards the next Winter Olympics and the plan. I know you're kind of just catching your breath at the moment.
Yeah, I guess I haven't really made it known. So I guess I I'm kind of announcing it now that, I will be continuing on to Milano Cortina in 2026. And so that's just what I'm doing now here in Australia. I'm talking with the people who are wanting to help and support me towards that Olympics. We're just having the discussions around who would be on my team and then how they can help me, how the different institutes can help me facilitate my dream and my vision. And that's gonna, you know, ultimately like cost a lot of money, and I need the right people on board to be able to do that. So it takes a lot of planning in order to be able to do that. But and I have to recover from a small back injury I had at the Olympics. A back injury. I had a bulging disc actually blow up at the Olympics, which I've never had something like that. I've never had something like that really pop up before. I had a meniscal cartilage repair when I was like 18.
Yeah.
And so I've gone like 10 years unscathed. And I just think it was like a really intensive season, and my back got a little bit angry at from the last strength block that I did, and so we were just kind of managing that at the Olympics. And I actually am so grateful that I had my push coach there and my fantastic chiropractor there, who was able to get me competing pain-free.
Yeah.
But as soon as I finished the Olympics, I was like, I need time off physically. Yeah. And so I just haven't done anything. And then the last little while, it's all caught up on me. And I'm like, all right, I need to start moving again. So I'm actually up here in Brisbane this week, and I'm working with the guys down at QAS. Just to set up my rehab for the next month. And while I'm in Australia for the next month, I'll be rehabbing my back. So once I go back to Germany in about May, I'll then be able to get back into training. So yeah, that's what I'm up to at the moment.
Yeah. No, I mean, it sounds like there's some good stuff. Rehab's always important. And I mean, I come from the rowing background, so we know all about bad backs. We tend to get handed bulging discs every day. Yeah, I mean, I was the same going into Rio. I had a bulging disc, and I just managed it with a chiropractor and physio and rehab and stuff. And I've obviously since retired, but it doesn't plague me too much now. But it took a lot of hard work to not cause more damage. So definitely a good thing that you just taking some time now to look after it, for sure.
I'm in no rush to get back into training, like hardcore training anyway. So I'm going to do this right, because I don't want it to plague me over the next 4 years. I want to be able to reduce every chance of it popping back up. I'm just taking it slow and enjoying the rehab process. You know, it's not often that we get a time to just really just do chill kind of physical activity. so that's what I'm really enjoying it so far, which is really surprising. Rehab's normally tedious, but I'm enjoying it.
No, but I think it's come at a good time for you, when your body obviously needs to rest and recover. And often you feel like you come back stronger. I mean, yeah, I've come back from, back problems and ops and stuff. And usually I feel like that rehab process is, I'm so focused during that time. And then I come back and I'm like, right, I'm going to blow everyone out the water now. I'm going to come back so much stronger than before. So it kind of fuels a little bit of a fire, which is quite nice. So we definitely look forward to seeing, kind of where you go over the next few years and how you keep developing your team. And yeah, we're just really excited to keep following your journey. It's been really, really awesome to chat to you. I just have a few more questions for you, a little bit deeper thinking ones. So here we go.
Mm-hmm.
What have you done that you are most proud of?
I think I've defied the odds and have, like a lot of people said that Australian couldn't be competitive with the bigger nations in the world, and I was on 5 podiums last season with the big nations in the world, and so I think that's what I'm most proud of.
Okay, name one thing on your bucket list.
Ooh, that's very interesting. One thing on my bucket list. I think I would like to learn to play a musical instrument.
Oh, good one.
I don't know. Oh, no. My one thing on my bucket list is that I would actually like to learn how to speak German fluently. Oh. Like, I've lived in Germany now for 2 years. And I've gotten by with just broken German, but I would really love to be able to, like, be confident and have a fluent conversation in German. That's something that's changed over the last few years. I think I would also love to play a musical instrument, but that's really been like something that I now want to do, speak German.
Okay. We're going to follow your progress in that front. See how you go there. last question. What is the best advice you have ever been given?
It was given to me when I was quite young. I think I was around 10, and it was given to me by one of my dad's mates, who he was an Olympian. I don't know what he was, but he said to me, as you get to the end of high school and you will find that all your friends give up sport to focus on education and do not give up on sport. Because then the ones who push through that really hard time are often the ones that are successful. And I didn't quite get that at the time because I was like, why would people give up sport just because year 11 and 12, but I saw it happen and I didn't, and I kept going and I was able to push through that time and be able to continue on as an athlete, as an adult. And I guess that's half the reason why I'm successful, because I kept going. And yeah, I think that's mainly the one. And then I think that's also where like my attitude of keep going came from, was just when like things got really hard and every, you know, I lost sponsors, I lost teammates, and I looked like I had no way I could compete that season. I just kept going, and all of a sudden something popped up, a person popped up that wanted to help and provide me with money, a teammate popped up who wanted to come on board. And and so that kind of, I guess that a piece of advice all the way back then was what has like led me to where I am today, because I just keep going no matter what is thrown at me.
Yeah, it's all about that resilience. And I think that's kind of every time you hit kind of a barrier and you move through it, you know, you build a little bit of resilience, and then you build a little bit more and a little bit more. And resilience is, it's a massive part of our lives and how we can continue to push through things. So yeah, I think it is, it's almost like that first step of just carrying on with your sport where you felt like it was getting tough, is that was like the first step. And from there it just became easier and easier to build that up. So, so yeah, I love that. Awesome advice. And yeah, so important for not only athletes, but everyone, just to make sure we're building resilience in everything we do, and not giving up.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yes, and I mean, especially the last 2 years have been hard for everybody in different ways, and a lot of the time there's like lost hope and like, oh well, like that's done, like how am I going to be able to get through? But if you just keep going, then all of a sudden there's light at the end of the tunnel. And like you said, it doesn't just appeal like apply to athletes, it applies to everybody in all shapes of life.
Yeah, totally. I mean, sometimes we feel like we're stuck and we feel like, is this going to be forever? Are we going to be stuck here forever feeling like this? But we're not, and we will, you know, things will get better, and it's just keeping that positivity going. So
yeah
amazing. Bree, thank you. Yeah, thank you so much for kind of sharing your journey with us, and we really look forward to seeing how you continue to develop your team and yourself leading to the next Olympics. And we wish you all the best.
Oh, thank you so much. It was so nice chatting with you.
If you would like to find out more about the Girls Only Project, visit our website at www.girlsonlyproject.org, or follow us at Go Project SA on Twitter, or at Girls Only Project on Facebook and Instagram.